The call came in before dawn. A man had been shot inside his own home. By the time police reached the narrow South Philadelphia street, the story was already spreading. The victim was a journalist, a familiar name, a voice tied to city politics, housing, and power. Within hours, fear moved faster than facts. Was this a hit? Was it retaliation? Was someone sending a message? Inside the house, the scene was quiet and contained. No forced entry, no chaos in the street, just a body, a gunshot wound, and a city holding its breath. In a year already marked by violence, this felt different. A reporter killed where he slept, colleagues warned of escalation, officials urged patience. The truth was not loud. It did not announce itself. Before the sun fully rose, investigators faced a choice: chase the fear gripping the city, or follow the evidence sitting in a silent room. Chapter 1. The morning it broke. The shooting was reported in the early hours of October 2, 2023. A call came from a row house in South Philadelphia, a tight block where front doors opened straight onto the sidewalk. Officers arrived to find Joshua Kruger suffering from a gunshot wound. Paramedics worked quickly, but the injury was severe. Kruger was transported to a hospital, where he later died. Police secured the scene before daylight. Neighbors stood back, some still in sleep clothes, watching patrol lights cut across brick facades. Word spread fast. Josh Kruger was not an anonymous victim. He was a journalist who had written about Philadelphia's political machinery, housing policy, and the lives caught in between. Within minutes, the questions turned outward. Who would want him dead? Inside the home, detectives moved carefully. The layout was modest, no obvious signs of forced entry, no broken doors or shattered windows. Furniture was largely undisturbed. This did not look like a robbery. It did not look like a struggle that spilled from room to room. The gunshot had happened inside, in close quarters. Officers documented shell casings and blood patterns. They photographed doorways, floors, and furniture. They noted the absence of ransacking. These early observations mattered. They would shape every decision that followed. As the morning wore on, the city reacted. Newsrooms scrambled. Social media filled with speculation. Kruger had written pieces that angered powerful people. He had also become a public figure beyond his reporting, known for sharp opinions and personal disclosures. To many, the explanation felt obvious. A journalist had been silenced. Philadelphia police acknowledged the concern. They did not dismiss the possibility of targeted violence. At the same time, they cautioned against assumptions. Investigators emphasized that all possibilities remained open. Their focus, they said, was evidence. The medical findings provided little clarity beyond cause. A single gunshot wound, fatal. The manner of death was homicide, but homicide alone did not answer motive. Detectives needed to know who had been inside the house and why. They began with the timeline: who last saw Kruger alive, who lived with him, who had access. This was routine work, but the pressure was intense. Every hour without answers fed public anxiety. Journalists across the city asked whether their work put them at risk. Advocacy groups warned about escalating threats against media workers nationwide. At the scene, one detail stood out. Someone else had been inside the home when the shooting occurred. This was not immediately framed as a suspect. At this stage, it was simply a fact. Police interviewed the person present. They documented statements. They checked for inconsistencies, but they did not rush conclusions. The house itself offered few dramatic clues. No signs of an intruder fleeing through the back. No neighbors reported seeing a stranger enter or leave at the time of the shooting. The street cameras showed routine overnight activity, nothing that resembled a coordinated attack. As daylight replaced flashing lights, investigators faced a narrowing path. The initial fear of a public, targeted killing had not disappeared, but it was now competing with something quieter. A crime that did not announce itself to the street. A violence that happened within walls. By late morning, police confirmed the victim's identity publicly. The name carried weight. Statements of shock came from city officials and fellow journalists. Calls for protection and accountability followed. At the same time, detectives continued their work away from microphones. They reviewed phone records. They examined relationships. They mapped recent events in Kruger's life, not to judge, but to understand context. This was not about reputation. It was about proximity and opportunity. Nothing in the house suggested a professional hit. That did not rule it out, but it weakened the theory. The absence of forced entry mattered. So did the presence of someone known to the victim at the moment of violence. As the first day closed, the case stood at a crossroads. Public fear pointed outward, towards shadowy enemies and political retaliation. The evidence so far pointed inward, toward the people closest to the victim, toward a version of events that would complicate the narrative and challenge assumptions. The city wanted answers. Investigators were not ready to give them. The truth was still forming, piece by piece, in a quiet house that no longer felt like a crime scene, but like the center of a story far more complex than anyone expected. Chapter 2. The Turn Inside the House. As investigators moved past the first 24 hours, the focus shifted from the scene to the people in Josh Krueger's life. This was standard procedure, but in this case, it carried unusual weight. Krueger was not just a victim. He was a public figure whose work and persona blurred personal and professional boundaries. Detectives built a profile. Krueger had worked as a journalist covering city politics, housing, and policy. He had also served in communications roles connected to local government. His reporting and commentary drew attention, praise, and criticism. In the weeks before his death, he had faced public scrutiny over questions about his background and credibility. Some of that scrutiny was intense. None of it, on its own, proved motive for murder. Police examined recent threats. They reviewed emails, messages, and social media posts. They looked for patterns that suggested planning or escalation. This work mattered because it tested the initial fear gripping the city. If someone had targeted Krueger for his work, there would likely be warning signs. So far, investigators found noise but no clear signal. At the same time, they looked closer at the person who had been inside the house when the shooting happened. This individual was not treated publicly as a suspect in the early hours. Privately, detectives did what they always do. They compared statements to physical evidence. They checked timelines. They looked for gaps. The relationship between Krueger and this person became central. They lived together. They shared space, routines, and private history. This proximity changed the math of the case. Opportunity was no longer theoretical. It was immediate. Investigators noted inconsistencies between early accounts and what the physical evidence suggested. These were not dramatic contradictions. They were small things, where someone said they stood, how events were described, what was said to have happened before the shot was fired. In homicide work, small things accumulate. Police also examined the weapon involved. They traced ownership and access. They reconstructed how the shot could have been fired inside the house. This was technical work, slow and methodical. It did not fit the pace of public speculation, but it mattered more. As this picture developed, the narrative began to shift. The idea of an external attacker became harder to support. There was still no evidence of forced entry, no credible sightings of a stranger, no trail leading outward from the home. Everything pointed back to the interior. This shift carried consequences beyond the case itself. Media organizations had raised alarms about journalist safety. Those concerns were real, but now they existed alongside a quieter truth. This killing might not be about silencing a reporter. It might be about a private conflict that turned fatal. Police prepared for the moment when this pivot would become public. They understood the sensitivity. Accusing someone close to the victim would complicate grief, outrage, and trust. It would also raise uncomfortable questions about credibility, truth, and how narratives form in the absence of facts. When investigators moved to make an arrest, they did so based on evidence, not pressure. The charge reflected what they believed could be proven. The shooting, they said, was not the result of an unknown intruder. It was the result of a dispute inside the home. The arrest marked a clear break from the initial fears. The city's attention turned sharply. Some reacted with relief, others with confusion. For journalists who had feared a targeted attack, the answer felt unsatisfying. For those close to Krueger, it felt devastating in a different way. Police emphasized what was proven and what was not. They avoided speculation about broader motives. The case, they said, would be decided in court. Facts would matter more than assumptions. By the end of the second chapter of this investigation, the central question had changed. It was no longer about who might have wanted a journalist dead. It was about how a private relationship ended in violence and how quickly a public narrative can outrun the truth. The case moved forward, but the damage to trust, both personal and public, was already done. Chapter 3. What was proven? The case ended without a trial. The person charged in Josh Krueger's death entered a guilty plea in Philadelphia court. The plea acknowledged responsibility for the shooting inside the home. It removed any remaining doubt about whether an unknown attacker had been involved. There was no evidence of a targeted killing tied to journalism. The violence came from within the house. Prosecutors laid out what they could prove. The shooting occurred during a dispute between two people who lived together. The gun was accessible inside the home. There was no forced entry. No third party was present. These points were supported by physical evidence, witness statements, and forensic analysis. They did not rely on motive speculation. They relied on what happened in that room. What remained contested in public discussion was not the outcome, but the meaning. Early fears of targeted violence had shaped the first hours of coverage. That fear was understandable. Journalists across the country had faced threats. Philadelphia had seen rising violence. The idea that a reporter had been killed for his work fit a broader national anxiety. The facts did not support that conclusion. Police were clear about what was proven and what was not. There was no evidence that Krueger was targeted because of his reporting. There was no evidence of a coordinated attack. The killing was personal, not political. The resolution forced a reckoning in the city's media circles. Some acknowledged how quickly assumptions had taken hold. Others focused on the deeper tragedy. A man was dead. A life ended in a private moment that became public spectacle. The speed of modern narrative had filled gaps before investigators could. There were also unresolved questions that the plea did not answer. Why the dispute escalated to violence? What pressures existed inside the relationship? Those questions mattered to understanding human behavior, but they were not required to establish guilt. The legal system closed the case based on proof, not interpretation. For Philadelphia journalism, the impact lingered. The case became a lesson in caution, in waiting for facts, in separating fear from evidence, in recognizing how credibility, once damaged, complicates every story that follows. Josh Krueger's death was not the story many thought it was in the first hours. It was smaller in scope and larger in consequence. A private act that exposed how quickly public trust can fracture, how easily narratives form in the absence of certainty. The final record was clear: a homicide inside a home, a guilty plea, a city forced to confront not just violence, but the cost of assuming the worst before knowing the truth.